I think it's not so much for me about understanding it, it's more just knowing it or something, you know? Like, I feel like if I would look back enough years, then there's a movement over these years where it's like moments of knowing have happened or something. And this, these moments of knowing open something. So you could say that there's more awareness or something. Something like this.
Any feeling about, or any movement of control related to this knowing? Controlling it through knowing it? So knowledge usually is used to control things, to facilitate things, to build bigger houses, faster cars, launch rockets to the moon or somewhere else. So this flavor of control, is it related to this knowing?
No, I don't really have so much to say about that. I don't really see it like that.
Mm-hmm.
If I would consider our community, for example, so it started without any idea to have a community. It was a sort of spontaneous happening out of a retreat situation where the people in the retreat would like to live together. So that's how it started. And if I look back over the 6 or 7 years we've had this community, it feels like it's got its own rhythm or its own life or something. So since we've been in this house, for example, as we've needed more accommodation, we've renovated another room, or we're suddenly given a bit more accommodation, and it's like something is opening, and it's almost like it opens according to its own rhythm or something. So I can see that. I mean, I can see that happening. I have some sort of intuition about it. I might say, we're going to go and speak to those people. We might need to rent some more rooms or something. So there's a sort of intuition about this mm-hmm. thing happening. But I wouldn't use a word like control for that.
So, okay, knowing not in the sense of controlling it, but just in the sense
an awareness about it. More
awareness,
like an awareness
about
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That it unfolds.
That it's unfolding. And for example, people come into the community and people leave the community. And it may be there's some involvement from myself, but actually not really. So when I really see it, somehow somebody's drawn to the community. Maybe I talk to them a bit and get rid of a few of their fears or something, you know. But basically, they've just chosen to come here. And then equally, when people go, it's maybe looking like I'm saying, yeah, well, you know, maybe it's time for you to go or something. But actually, again, it feels like they're going, you know. They're coming and they're going. And it's like this is in the middle of it, you know.
Are there sometimes energies in you to recommend somebody to go after a certain time? Does that happen?
I don't know about recommend, but there's been times when I say, go.
Okay. That's all.
So whether that's personally me saying that, it doesn't feel really personally that I'm sitting down saying, oh, well, this and that and the other, and therefore you have to go. It's more like now is the moment for me to say go or something.
Okay.
And I can only see it happening after quite a lot, what you could call a long period of patience, and then realizing that that person's not really interested in what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But then anyway, I think they go anyway because they also see that, you know. They also see that it's not really working. Then they go, and they go some other situation in their life.
So normally it happens out of itself. Then normally the people, when you say go, and you did it, obviously, then...
A few times I said go when they might not have been planning to go. But, different situations. Sometimes mm-hmm. people have left who I would prefer they would have stayed, you know. And
mm-hmm.
And if I feel that, you know, that they're going when perhaps it would be better to stay, then usually we have a meeting of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the person is open for it, then everybody gets a chance and we'll give that person some reflection on the situation. And then if that person is meant to stay here, then they tend to stay here. because maybe they had some idea or some fear came up or some resistance came up, and the way of resolving it was just to go. But equally, sometimes people go very suddenly, and there's no time for any kind of process. They've kind of gone, you know. And it's okay, bye bye. You know. And in a way, it doesn't really matter. And there's a little bit. Sometimes I can almost feel like a miracle happens, you know, because maybe, for example, we've had we've probably had about four people five people even have done website design, which is a particularly skillful means, you know, which we need in the community. We have a lot of websites, yeah. So if that person suddenly leaves, then you feel like, oh God, how are we going to manage? You know? But somehow the door opens and another person walks in and carries on doing website. You know, so you think, wow, how did that happen? You see, so
that's the mystery. Yeah.
You know, it's like, So in a way, what I see more and more is that this is a wonderful laboratory. This community is a wonderful laboratory where I can observe life, how it works somehow, how it's happening, how is the thing we call life happening. And I see it as a kind of microcosm of the bigger, you know, the city or the world or whatever, you know.
Interpersonal relationship and all that stuff.
Yeah, everything that happens everywhere else is also happening
also here.
So it's So it's a sort of. I see it sometimes as a prototype of a possibility.
What about liberating people? Did some people reach that state of being a friend without any patterns when they were together with you, or is it rather rare? Event, or
I think it's a fairly rare event, in fact. there's been quite a lot of people either who had come close for some time but maybe not living with me, or people here in this community who've been living with me who have definitely had some kind of opening, have definitely glimpsed realization, they've glimpsed truth. There's no doubt about that. Quite a lot of people. But it seems then that unless that is embodied, somehow the structures of the mind come and the person gets pulled back into the habitual patterns. So I don't have yet a clear picture how all that quite works. And so it just happens, you can say. And I would say, if I'm very honest, that there's been quite a number of people who initially I might have said, oh, that person is now self-realized, they're awake. But maybe a little bit later, some time has passed, I probably wouldn't say that. And there's probably only one person I would say that about. And she wouldn't agree with me. Which makes me feel even more that it could be true. You know? And this poor woman, she was actually my wife, but we never had really a kind of husband and wife exactly situation. But we did live together for about 11 years, and I would have to admit taking this woman on a pretty strong adventure. You know, or we had it together, a strong adventure, you can say. But I would think she is the only one I would say. Well, when she finally left the community, because we lived together in this community, when she finally left the community, we had a little goodbye party. And I said to everybody something like, well, this, I don't have anything else I should do with this woman, you know. So, that's only one person in 14 years. But there are many other people who I feel are either close to that or have had quite long experiences of that, but I wouldn't be able to say that I don't have anything else to do with them.
Okay.
And anyway, it's a very difficult subject, and whenever I try to Think about it. I always feel like, well, anyway, it's not my business.
It's a difficult
and
question.
And I don't have to bother about it, and it will work out somehow, you know? Like, I can think now of a man who I met some years ago in Copenhagen, and quite quickly something happened where he felt himself very open. I also felt him very open. And for some time we were kind of friends, and I felt like, oh, he got it. He's really realized. But maybe later I wondered a bit about that. And then recently he's starting to offer his own meetings. And I can't feel a big, complete yes for that. You know, mm-hmm. I can't really say, okay, I support you. He's not asking me to, but if he would ask me, I would have to say, well, I'm not really sure. I don't think I can really do that. But in the end, I don't care because it's not my business, you know. And if it works out, it's fine. And if it doesn't work out, it's also fine. So actually, I don't really care about it.
Mm.
It's just not my business.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, people have all kinds of ideas about this subject. Yeah.
Yes, of course. This is the biggest obstacle.
Almost everybody that you meet will tell you, well, that one, they're not real masters, they're not really awakened, but that one, they definitely are, you know, and everybody you would ask has a different team, so, nobody knows really, you know, so it's like, I think it doesn't work that way, it works in another way.
Yes, we are then close to get stuck into concepts again and ideas and matching expectations with what could be. This is very, very, very thin ice that we've been walking on there. Still an interesting question. I heard somebody talk about Osho, that in the early years he was different than in the later years, and that person gave the impression or the implication that Osho might also have fallen asleep again, or at least partially fallen asleep again.
It's endless, I think, endless speculation, you know. And I think it doesn't really matter, you see, because whether he fell asleep or he was asleep, the fact is he completely changed my life.
Yeah.
And for those years, I got a tremendous benefit. And even if I would say, okay, well, he wasn't really a master and he wasn't really enlightened and blah, 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 who cares? Because I got tremendous benefit from meeting him.
This is clear.
So in a way, I don't really care if he was or he wasn't, you know. And I think actually it's a silly game, all this speculation and judgments about masters. You know, people sit in cafes discussing this one and that one as if they're choosing fashion designers or something. You know, I mean, it seems to me a bit silly because, I mean, in my own case, I definitely had a complete no to meet Osho. I didn't want to go to India and I didn't want anything to do with Osho. He was not at all interesting. I wasn't interested in masters. I didn't even know what a master was. But existence picked me up and put me in his ashram. And then when I was there, it was like, wow, this is great, you know, and I gave up my whole life for this. So I don't think people need to bother about it.
So it's another thought game, another mind game.
Yeah, I think completely.
No use.
If you're meant to meet, for example, a number of the people that live in this community have never spent time with any other master.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work, you know? Because there's piles of them around, you know? So how does that work? I remember when I first came to Germany, I didn't really plan to come to Germany, but when I came to Germany and started traveling, I was kind of passed from city to city somehow. And I was always like, well, it's very strange, isn't it? Because people come to my meetings, but actually there are so many spiritual masters or spiritual teachers in Germany. So why do these people come? And why do they come to my meeting when they've never been to any other meeting? You see? And I thought, well, this is all very strange. I don't know how it's working, you know? And then you don't have to bother about it, you know? It doesn't matter how it's working.
Yeah,
it's just working somehow. So this is also interesting because if you see, you know, these video things where they show also the audience that's there with some teacher, I mean, I can feel that every teacher collects around him a certain kind of people that fit with him. And another master or mistress will have completely different people. So how does all that work? I mean, it must be some energy phenomena happening.
Yeah,
you see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would explain it at least. Yeah.
I mean, this website, your interview, I mean, this interview is for a website where they have, I don't know, 200 different masters, you see.
Yeah. I don't know how many, but anyway, many.
Over 100 they have, I think, at least. Yeah. So, I mean, why do you click on that guy's name and not on that guy's name or that woman's name? Yes. You know? So it's like it's very unimportant, I think. My own sense is it just happens somehow. Mm. It just happens. Mm. Mm. I've got a friend who, well, he's not really a friend anymore, but he used to be a friend, and he was always saying, you know, that he doesn't have to do anything because the people who he's supposed to meet, they will just show up in his life, and all he used to do was to make himself available by going to sit in a cafe every evening. So he would go, you know, to a cafe and sit there, and then people would come to him and start talking, asking him a question or something. This was his way of sharing with people. For example.
Was he a known teacher, a practicing teacher, or was he just a friend?
No, he made himself available.
Finished.
He'd had his own master. He'd been 2 years with a master, a very well-known Indian master. And he'd had his own ashram back in California, in San Francisco, for some years, not so many years. And then somehow, I don't know exactly what happened, but it seemed he didn't want to teach. And then he lived rather quietly with himself. And then some years passed, and then again he was ready to share. And then when I met him, he was sitting in cafes and making himself available. But he would always say, well, that's all he did. You know, he just... By being available, the people who were meant to come and meet him, they would somehow come and meet him.
Okay. This is, again, an energetic...
Sort of an energetic thing, yeah.
That direction, yeah.
And I remember Papaji, for example, he was invited to Australia by some disciple of his. And when he came to Australia, somewhere near Sydney, the guy who'd invited him was trying to get friends and people he knew to come and meet Papaji. And almost nobody was interested. This was quite a few years before Papaji was known. But the man's girlfriend was completely interested. So at a certain point, Papaji said, oh, well, there you are. I go back to India now. I've met this woman, and she was the one I came to meet, you know. And then he went back to India. So it's like, you know... What can you say? You know, it's not working as we think it should work.
The best is not to think at all about these things. These stories expose it.
And this is true of the whole life, I think.
Yes.
It's not just about spiritual life, but what we're really talking about is just life.
Yes.
And you can drop off the spiritual.
Yeah.
And the guys that I've interviewed, because sometimes people ask me, well, kind of, who's the best one, you know? Who would you recommend, you know? And, I mean, what I can see from meeting quite a few, you know, masters, is the one I would probably recommend is just very ordinary and very simple, actually. They're not what people imagine, you know. They're not something very grand or special. I mean, Osho's projection, how much he believed his own projection, I don't know. But, you know, he was somehow like a Hollywood's idea of a spiritual master, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
He had special clothes, he had a special platform, special chair, special car. I mean, everything was kind of special. I mean, he stepped right out of Hollywood, actually. And I think he did it deliberately, because back, I think, 30 years ago, it was probably what people like me needed. You know, I needed something like that.
But he was not attached to this lifestyle.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't in the beginning. Maybe he became attached later. Maybe he got attached to his own game later. I don't know. Maybe something changed.
Yeah, one never knows. And again, the mystery. So how could we know?
You see, I mean, because of all his special things, he created himself into a very special master, very far away. And the effect of that was to attract many people to him. So I've sat with him with 12,000 people, you know, sitting in front of him. So, I mean, he would have had a conscious game that he decided to play, if you like.
To play this.
You know? because he certainly attracted really thousands of people. So his game worked, I think, because he, at that time, Christian Murthy had been very busy traveling around the world for 30 or 40 years.
J. Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you like, Osho became in a way the next important step, perhaps, and he attracted many people, he opened their hearts. Maybe that was his role, you know, and then maybe other things are happening now, different things are happening now.
So J. Krishnamurti had this attraction effects as Osho, is that?
Well, I think, I don't know really, this, I mean, different, yeah? I mean, J. Krishnamurti was very different.
He spoke in front of thousands of people, as I understand.
Yeah, I think he at certain times, he spoke in front of a lot of people, and for many years, you know, there were many books and many meetings. He traveled between America and California and Europe and India. So he, this triangle, he traveled for many years. So he had a profound effect, I think.
For me, he had a tremendous effect.
Yeah.
When I saw the first videos, I thought, what is this guy saying? Is he crazy?
Mm.
Time is thought.
Right.
What is this? But somehow this triggered questioning.
Yeah, I went to one or two of his live meetings, and he would stop every so often, and he'd look at the audience, he'd see that nobody was following him, he'd say, you are following the speaker, and he could see nobody, or hardly anybody was following him, but, you know, so yes, I mean, it was difficult to understand what he was telling somehow. And at the end of his life, there's a very beautiful book that at the end of his life they put a tape recorder sort of on by his bedside or something. Mm-hmm. And there's a book from this this tapes, and it always touched me very deeply, because somehow by the time he was leaving his body, he was quite old, I think his body was 80 something. And he had this profound sadness that nobody ever understood him. You know? So, if that was true or not, I don't know, but he somehow felt like that. And there's a famous reflection that his last talk in Madras, which is now Chennai in southern India, he used to go there maybe every year or something, I don't know. In a way, that was where he started his whole thing in Madras. And there's a story that on his last visit, before he had to go back and then he couldn't travel anymore, there was a man in the audience, and he looked at this man and he said, well, you've been sitting there for the last 40 years, you know, and basically saying, well, what are you doing sitting there, you know? Do you really not understand for 40 years? You see, and it's very...
What can you say?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But he was very lovely. I mean, I had, as I said, I think I attended 1 week of his meetings every day, and I remember him as a very, I can't really remember what he said, but the way he said it and the kind of, the aura, his aura was very lovely, actually.
Mm.
He had some kind of elegance, some old-fashioned elegance or something.
Very style. Yeah, I don't call it. He was a gentleman, so some kind of. Yeah, I don't know. Yes. But not arrogant at all. And what I see in these videos,
simple.
He always said the speaker is not important at all. And when they clap their hands, why do you clap your hands?
I think he had a structure about that, actually.
Probably, yes, yeah, sure. And
who's dialoguing?
Yeah, who's dialoguing? Yeah. So we had J. Krishnamurti, Osho. Nowadays, one of these big magnets, Eckhart Tolle, I think, is one who is.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a copy of his book Power of Now when he first self-published it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how long ago that was. It must have been about 15 years ago, I think. And I remember a friend gave me this book. I think she'd been to America and she came back to us. I was living in Australia at the time. She came back and gave me this book. And I remember looking through this book and everything I read, my sense was, oh, I could have said that. In fact, I am saying that, you know. It was like a... And I think it's a brilliant book, actually.
It's brilliant,
because
I bet it, yeah.
In a way, he wrote it in a very simple language. And it's a book which almost anybody can access. So it's been very, very successful because everybody can be touched from some part of this book. Yeah. So I think, yeah, he deserves somehow this being a big strong magnet because... he has a way of expressing things which are very clear. For example, I watched one or two of the programs he did on television with Winfried Oprah. So, I mean, in those programs, he went each program was one chapter of his book about planet Earth. Yeah, was it called New Earth. And it was such a funny, for me, it was such a funny television because there he was, completely boring looking, completely quiet looking, completely not television material.
Yes.
And then sitting next to him was this woman who's like the best television kind of person in the world and waving her arms and talking. And then she suddenly noticed he's not saying anything and then she'd say, ask him something, you know, and it was a beautiful television because in the end you could feel something very special about this guy which you could completely miss in a way because he's looking quite ordinary, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Mm. What about Anthony de Mello? That's another Jesuit. Did you have any contact?
I've heard his name, but I have to admit I don't know so much. Yeah. We were talking earlier that whether it's the Jesuit way or the Advaita way or the Zen way or the Sufi way, or
exactly.
You know, there are different, many different spiritual systems or paths, if you want to call it like a path. It's not really a path, but anyway. But we agreed very easily it all leads to the same source. Yeah.
Yeah?
So.
Yeah.